This is the Goalkeepers Union Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union Podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the similar voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. Similar, go on.
Well, you've just said something to me before we've started recording, and I thought, you know what? That's a good way to start this week's podcast. Go on, give me your words of inspiration, your wisdom.
Well, it wasn't necessarily words of inspiration. I was being a bit, what's the word? It was kind of like a bit of a cliche, I find, that is used by a lot of motivational speakers. And I'm sure everybody listening to this podcast, you will have heard this at least once, which is the quote, or the definition of insanity that people talk about, which is to continue to do the same thing and expect different results. That's, which is something that's also used in football terms a lot, used in goalkeeping terms a lot, which is, of course, if you're continuing to do the same type of training, yet you're looking to work in or work on different attributes, well, then you're not necessarily going to be able to do that. You have to continually change, continually adapt, to be flexible with your approach in order to get the results that you desire.
Okay, sorry, slightly confused, because you said to me, keep doing the same things and you'll yield success or something. I suppose that's the same thing, right?
No, that was me just being an idiot. That was when we were having that's when we were having an off-air chat, and you made fun of me because I did something that I've done on every single podcast, 200 plus podcasts, and I've yet to learn. And so I kind of just changed that quote to, yeah, continue to do the same things and you'll get success. Of course you won't. That's ridiculous. If you continue to do the same things, because I'm not getting success. Every single podcast, I do this same thing. I'm not going to say what it is because it's a little bit embarrassing, but I do it every single time. 200 times I've done it now, and yet I haven't learned my lesson.
Yeah, well, you are quite forgetful, aren't you? You were forgetful, very forgetful again last week, which 60,000 plus people have now seen.
And is it that many people?
Yeah, it's that many people now, mate. Well done. Well done, you.
I did hear that it was outperforming Robbie Williams. Not that I care. You know that I'm outperforming Robbie Williams, but, you know, it is what it is, really, I guess. It's some people have it, some people don't.
To be fair, on the Robbie Williams one, as much as it is Robbie Williams and he's a huge global star, I actually think those watching the Fosscast are more into current players and ex-players and, you know, people like you from inside the game talking about the game, that behind-the-curtain type of content you get from the likes of a goalkeeping super agent called Richard Lee.
There you go. But I was forgetful. Wasn't I? I was incredibly forgetful. Can I give my side of the story first? Do you want to explain what happened, or shall I give my side of the story?
We've spoken about it a few times before, really. It's an ongoing theme, but please, you do explain.
Well, no, I was obviously doing the Fosscast, naturally a little bit nervous. You know, I'm aware that they get a few more listeners than us, you know, a handful more. So I was thinking, well, I want to come across well. So, you know, naturally I was prepared. I had all sorts in mind that I'd like to talk about. And I was also a little bit wary of some of the questions that might come. So I was very focused, wanted to make sure that I answered them as best I could, and gave a good picture as to what a goalkeeping agent is, explained the story that happened, the whole Newcastle story. So I think I was so focused on that I forgot, on a very popular podcast talking about goalkeeping, I forgot to mention you or our podcast. I mean, I've got no defense, and I'm not even going to try and come up with an excuse other than in that moment, I was just a little bit nervous.
Which also surprises me. Mm. You needed to channel your inner Tom Heaton. Well, no, turn those nerves into excitement.
It was excitement. I think it was, and I was really pleased with how it came across, actually. Like, I did watch it back, because I did it, and you never really know until you see it back. And well, big thank you, I guess, to everyone who's made contacts. Actually, a lot of people have, and I was surprised at the amount of people that do watch it. And I've said that a couple of times, but no, credit to Ben. You know, he's doing some great stuff. I know he's over in Philadelphia now and doing some interesting stuff over there. But I've been really pleased. Like, I think I haven't really seen anything negative, not that I've been looking too much, but I've been really pleased with how it came across. But I think where it was just that, I was excited, I was looking forward to it, and I think where my focus was just wanting to give across and put across a really good idea as to what the business is, the agency is, obviously the whole situation with Ben and Newcastle. It almost felt like suddenly the podcast was over. We were talking and it was like, oh, that's an hour, right, we need to wrap up. and they just wrapped it up. And then as soon as it finished, the first thing I said to Ben was, oh no, I've forgotten a couple of key people here. And he just laughed. It was too late at that point. They couldn't suddenly start rolling again. And, oh, Rich, anything else you'd like to say? You know, it just wouldn't have, just wouldn't have worked.
No, of course not. And I am jesting. And the link, to be fair, to the podcast was on the comments section. They put it there, which was lovely of them, to Richard Lee's podcast. So, you know, always. Well, good.
I mean, I did give them the link. Does that like give me any? Is that any silver lining there? The fact they called it the Richard Lee podcast. I mean, look, that might have also been part of my text that I sent to them, but whatever.
The comments were great as well, actually. Like you said, it was very positive. So lots of people hoping and wishing and requesting that you're back on again. So who knows?
Well, there you go. Maybe next time I will bring that magician who keeps my spreadsheet up to date and is also a fellow co-host of the Richard Lee podcast.
Okay, we've got some correspondence, my good friend.
Okay.
And this has come from a chap who plays for Sollentuna FK in Sweden, but is actually from Alaska in the US.
Okay.
So a well-traveled individual. Benji Machini has messaged in and said, appreciate all you do for goalkeepers. Looking for advice. My ball-playing ability is my strength, according to my stats, and the fact I am double-footed. I believe with the right players around me, my save percentage would increase dramatically. Should I double down and focus on my ball-playing ability to stand out, or give it less focus and attempt to somehow increase save percentage? My current save percentage is at 72%. Thank you, gents.
I love this. I love how detailed he is. It's a really, really tough question because there's different ways in which you can, I suppose, periodize what it is that you do. I know that, for instance, when I played, and a lot of this was off my own back, I would almost have periods of time where I would then work at something specifically, that little bit more than the rest. So, of course, you've always got to keep on top of everything you do. You know, the goalkeeping, it's not like you could just focus in one area one week and then another area the next week. General training, you need to be right in that you've got games coming up. And as much as you are continuing to improve and you've got an idea as to what you can be as your potential, you do need that sort of regular week to week going through the different attributes to make sure you're ready for each game. That being said, what I did, and I know it really helped me, and I know a lot of goalkeepers do this, is I would then hyper focus in a certain area for a period of time. So it might be a 6-week period where if it was increasing my spring, then it might be that I you know, get a plyometric program, I'm working on my flexibility, I'm doing some weight training, etc. And I'm doing that alongside a fitness coach for a 6-week period of time to then make sure that at the end of the 6 weeks, if I'm then doing jump tests so that I can actually measure objectively where I started and where I got to, I'd like to think by the end of the 6 weeks, I've then improved in that area. Then it might be, right, the next 6 weeks is going to be distribution or it's going to be cross-taking, so that you then go above and beyond for that period of time in order to maximize what it is that you do. So I don't know if that necessarily helps or if that makes sense, but that would be my advice here. I do get what he's saying as well, in that it's one of them when scouts come and watch, is it something like that where they will pick out your super strength and that's the reason they take the conversation further? So I do understand why he's thinking, do I then go to that next level even further with something that's already a super strength? The answer is it's difficult to know because yet you need something to stand out, but at the same time something could be exceptional. If another area is less than exceptional or seen as a potential weakness, then of course that in itself could be the reason you don't get a further call.
In this instance as well, the fact he's saying, do I give my ball playing ability less focus and attempt to somehow increase my save percentage? To just increase your save percentage isn't as straightforward as that, is it?
No, and of course that's where there's then so many different aspects to this. It could be what I just spoke about there about increasing your raw power. It could be working on the technique. It could be working on the positional sense, because all of them then fall under the category and will obviously help in terms of your shot stopping percentage. So it isn't quite as simple as that. I think that's where I go back to my point. I think as long as you are working on everything and you're quite good in terms of time management and compartmentalization, that's another thing. I think that although you might not be able to do everything physically, because there's only a certain bandwidth that you'll have in terms of the physical training that you do, there is always the potential to work on things mentally. So to go through things in your mind, to study the game, to work on the tactical side. So I do think, and that's the other thing, depending on time, and I appreciate the look, not everyone's got every hour of the day where they can focus on this. But if you do have free time, then it might even be that, right, in the morning, can I go through certain mental exercises? Then it might be my physical or technical training. Then it might be my physical training. Then it might be my tactical work. Then it might be, you know, so it almost turns into a 9 to 5, but you're only doing the physical aspect for an hour or two a day.
Okay, good stuff. Thank you for that, Benji. Let us know how you get on. And if you'd like to contact us just like Benji did, very easy to do so on email hello@goalkeepersunion.net, on Twitter @GKUnion, or on our phone number via WhatsApp 075-03673-020. On with the show?
Let's do it.
Starting in the Premier League at Villa Park, where Chelsea came away victors by 2-0, and Kepa Arrizabalaga made 3 incredible first half stops, one from Jacob Ramsey and Danny Ings as part of a triple save, and then again from Ings when tipping over the bar from close range. Yeah,
brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Are we going to start with that, or are we going to start with the pre-match comments? I just want to get into that, to be honest. I'm going to talk about the saves. I will do, but can we just talk about that first?
Yeah, we can talk about that first. There was some pre-match, wasn't there? So it was Roy Keane, Micah Richards, and Jamie Carragher. And they basically traversed their way around how and why Kepa is currently the number one under Graham Potter. We've heard this all before. It was pretty vague, essentially a positive, but with no real substance or, again, an understanding of the situation. And then Jamie Carragher finished it off with, in terms of Chelsea going forward, that goalkeeper's not good enough to win the Premier League. Boom, that was it. And then on to the next point. That was it.
That was it. Made our decision. There is absolutely no way back. He is not good enough. It was more, I think, it was more listening to Micah Richards as well, where, like, so presumptuous. You know, he's got this newfound focus. Like, has he? Like, has he? Is that what it is? Oh, he's got this newfound confidence. How do you know? Like, have you spoke to him? Do you know that suddenly he's now a different character to what he was? Even when I'm listening to the commentary during the game, he's now at the top of his game. He has got this newfound confidence. No, you don't. Again, that's not for you to say. You can't know if he's got a newfound focus. If he comes out in an interview and says, look, to be honest, I wasn't focused. Now I am. Then, yeah, absolutely. At that point, say he's got a newfound confidence. But everything they were saying was just so presumptuous, so matter of fact. Yeah, Jamie Carragher, he is just not good enough to win the Premier League with Chelsea. All right, what about when they do, or if they do? Then, is he then good enough? Again, how do you know that? And how have you come to that assumption based on what you've seen previously? But the fact that at the moment what we're seeing is very, very impressive. And yes, there is a new regime that's gone in there. Look, is it a coincidence as well that this has happened? And I know I give Ben Roberts a lot of love on this show, but arguably, if not the best goalkeeper coach in the world, certainly one of the top five, I would say. You see what he's done at Brighton, and now he's gone to Chelsea. So look, there's so many different factors to this, but no one looks deeper than the surface, I find, with a lot of the commentary when it comes to this. It is either black or white. It is as simple as that. And as far as they're concerned, he is just not good enough. And they've jumped to so many different conclusions. The majority, no doubt, are wrong. But it is. It just is what it is. And as you say, they move on to the next subject.
Yeah. If I can offer some defence or some form of defence on this. And by the way, you've got as much chance of getting the QE2 to the moon than you have of this happening. But I'd love to hear them all on the show at some point, just one by one, to talk about certain comments they make and the reasons behind them. Everyone deserves the right of reply, and it would genuinely make for a decent conversation, I think. But my defense for them in this case, and as a whole, and you alluded to this in a recent podcast actually, is that they have so much football to cover. There's so many clubs, there's so many players, there's 24-hour news round the clock now. So when pressed on the ins and outs of Kepa's career, even if it is their job to know and to entertain / inform us with that knowledge, I guess it's natural they might not have all the answers in that time frame allotted to them by Sky at that particular point of a broadcast. I mean, in a way, it's like me coming to you now and saying, Rich, what's the state of play at Barcelona at the moment? Why is it not working out for Xavi at his former club? And you coming back with, well, you know, there's a few issues behind the scenes. The players haven't quite gelled. They're not scoring enough. They're conceding too many. And of course, they lose El Clasico at the weekend. All that will do is upset the fans and the board. Do you know what I mean by that? It's that type of fluffy analysis with no substance, because you're not keeping tabs on what Barcelona are doing. You're not keeping tabs on Xavi. And you mentioned Kepa coming out and talking, and he actually did do an interview after the game and said, football's about ups and downs. It's about keeping your mentality strong and enjoying your work. Right now, I'm enjoying my work.
I think that's the difficulty. And by the way, I actually can speak of experience in this. I had a radio show. In fact, we had a radio show, didn't we? Not so long ago, a few years ago. Love Sport. Give that a quick mention. But I found that tough at times, because the only thing I would say, and I tried my best to always do it from my perspective, because it is hard. You're not going to be an expert in every area. I get that. And look, this is part of the reason we do think that at some point there needs to be that goalkeeping expert on there, because goalkeeping is a topic that is discussed a lot. And again, there's so many different talking points this weekend. But I think it's just that if you're a Michael Richards, if you're Gary Neville, and you're just doing it from your perspective, as much as I don't agree with a lot of the points they make, because again, it's not coming from a position of education or expertise, certainly in goalkeeping, I still think at least it's your opinion, it's your perspective. I kind of get that. I just think the bit that bugged me about this was just, it was very much matter of fact, and almost as if it was factual. He is now this, he is now that. Well, it's like, how do you know? You don't know. It's, again, if you're coming from your perspective, that's fine. That's the bit that I struggle with in terms of his commentary. And I'm so glad that he then went and put in the performance that he did, because it's still even now, where again, we talk a lot about the narrative. I still think the Kepa narrative is going to take a long, long, long time before that shifts. He's going to need a load more games like this and have like an Aaron Ramsdale type run, where suddenly it does then shift from the Aaron Ramsdale that people were discussing at Sheffield United to the Aaron Ramsdale that people are now discussing at Arsenal. For Kepa, we're probably talking a season's worth of solid performances, and for them to finish top two and so on and so forth. And at that point, maybe he then gets the kind of respect and the narrative that an Alisson, Edison, Ramsdale, or whoever else is getting now.
Yeah, and like you say, with Kepa, that narrative isn't going anywhere soon or ever. Potentially. It's like when you mention David Seaman and say people often refer to Ronaldinho, to Naeem, with Kepa, and Micah Richards was guilty of that in this analysis. It's the two EFL Cup finals. The one with the commotion of him not coming off against Manchester City, and last season the missed penalty against Liverpool. Anyway, on the whole, let's try and remember they were being positive about Kepa. Yeah. It was just that Carragher had to counteract all that positivity in his classic style with an FYI of, by the way, he's not good enough. But let's talk about the saves. The first half in particular, but the entire performance from Kepa really was very good.
Oh, yeah, it was. I mean, if we're... let's talk about the triple save to begin. I thought it was the second of the three for me was the best of the three. I think the first one, can't hold it, has to parry, gets a firm enough parry away, but the way in which he readjusts, sets himself, and the speed he gets down to his right-hand side to get the fingertips onto the post, quick up in order to get across his goal, and then produces a very good shape in order to make the follow-up save. Actually makes the save further in the game on the angle, similar in that he got himself into a really good position and produces a very good shape, given that it is point blank. And then the one that, yeah, was excellent. And I know that was the one that the commentators seemed to have as their favourite, which was the one where he's come across the line and made the point blank save. The bit I liked about this was actually, if you look at his footwork, his foot pattern, he's heading back towards his line. Like, he reads the situation brilliant. The ball's being crossed in. He can't come for the cross. So it's the realisation that he's heading back towards where the likelihood is the ball will go. For me, this is such intelligent goalkeeping that you can see he's so connected with the game, that's the only way I can really describe it, that he's predicting, he's seeing how it's playing out. The ball's whipped in, he's seeing it's going to be a glanced header, and it's almost like he's going to the point where he knows the ball will be. So his footwork's brilliant. He explodes at the right time, pretty much as the ball is being headed. He's already predicting what's happening. He then springs up into the top corner, gets his hands to it over the bar, and it's just a phenomenal save.
He had a little moment with himself, didn't he, after he made that save, where he just stayed on the floor and almost looked up to the sky.
Yeah, well, that, and I think all goalkeepers can relate to this, where, I don't know, sometimes goalkeeping, as much as we do talk about it from a technical aspect or, a mental aspect or what have you, sometimes there is, I guess the only thing I think is almost like a spiritual aspect, where you just know, like, this isn't one that, yeah, you can break down and he's like, logically he's done this and this and this, but you sometimes have a moment you're like, how did I just do that? And I think every goalkeeper listening to this podcast can relate, where you'll have had that moment where it is a, how did I just make that save? you know, and it is, and you could sense he's lying there, and that's exactly what's going through his head. Like, I can't believe I've just done that. That is amazing. And then it's a great feeling, by the way, because it is one where the thought process prior to that, well, this is it. There is no thought process. You are so connected with what's going on. You are, they talk about being in the flow, being in the zone. He will have been for that period of time, and he'll be lying there on the floor just in that moment, probably trying to take stock of what he's just done.
You don't know, you know, right? That's the classic case of it there.
There you go.
Well, you don't know, you don't know.
I mean, we could go through this. This could take a while. You don't know, you don't know, you know, you don't know, you know, you don't know. No, look, that was one of them. Yeah, of course, it's unconscious competence. That's what it is, where that's not him thinking, right, I need to get my footwork right. I need to get back in the middle of the goal. I need to get a spring to the top. You can't think all that. You haven't got time. That is where you're suddenly on autopilot and you are just doing what comes naturally and doing what he's learned over the past 25 years or whatever of him playing in goal. That is all of that, the culmination of everything he knows in that moment to show that intelligence to then make that save. Not just the intelligence, you then got the physical aspect, the tactical aspect, the technical aspect, everything coming together just to perform the perfect play.
There was a free kick in that game, 2 scored by Mason Mount, the second goal for Chelsea. Now, Emi Martinez stepping right as Mount connected, not criticised by pundits, but the question was raised as to if he'd stayed central, he would have saved it. Is that the case?
I just think he's lost the flight of it. I don't think he's guessing. I know when you look at it, it looks like he is guessing and he's predicting that it's going to go over the wall and he started to move early. I just think as it struck, it's a horrible one. And we've seen this beat a lot of goalkeepers where it's no real rotation on the ball. So it's very hard for the eyes to pick it up. And I think he's seen the initial strike. He's thought it's going up over the wall with a bit of whip. And then it's that realization that as soon as he's taken the step to the right, the ball corrects itself because there is no spin on the ball and it dips. It's a lovely strike. I mean, it dips just under the crossbar. Very little movement on the ball, as I say. So I just think he hasn't picked it up. I think it's as simple as that.
Okay, moving on to the Brentford Community Stadium, where Brentford beat Brighton 2-0 on Friday evening. And David Raya, another excellent performance from him as well. Saves from Caicedo, Veltman March and Lewis Dunk. A very good performance from the Brentford stopper.
Yeah, brilliant. And I think bouncing back from the game against Newcastle in particular, because I know that it was a real tough afternoon for him. We obviously touched on it on the pod last week. And it was one of those afternoons where nothing went right for him. You know, and certainly I know there was a pass that we discussed. And no doubt he would have been very frustrated after that game. So I think to show the kind of mentality that he can bounce back in the way that he has here and continue what has been a fantastic season for him personally, certainly so far, credit to him and some great saves here. I thought the tip over. It's interesting listening again to the commentary because there is very much a should save it vibe to a lot of the saves that he made in this game. But I suppose I liken it to a striker that, you know, when Salah goes through one-on-one and finishes against Ederson, it's not he should score and he does score. There is still compliments for the fact that it's a good finish. Yeah, I sometimes feel David Reyes made this top-hand save. And I think it was Gary Neville, you know, said it's a save that's pretty much straight at him, just above him. He should save this. There wasn't really anything complimentary about the save, but I thought it was excellent. You know, I think, again, it is moving at pace. He's got up very quickly, got fingertips to it. I thought it was very good. And then the save he made in particular second half where he's moving to his right-hand side, point-blank header, but it's just the movement and the improvisation in order to make the save with his leg and get it round the post. It's quite tough in that moment where you know you can't get hands to it. You've got to use whatever part of the body that you can. And he kind of just about manipulates his body in such a way where he's able to get his left leg, get it around the post. Yeah, I thought it was excellent. And then the full stretch save to his right as well needs a mention because, again, we talk about David Raya, the power that he's got. He is so flexible, agile. And I thought this full stretch to his right to get the fingertips, get enough on it to get it around the post. Top save.
It's funny, as I was listening to the Gary Neville comments on David Raya, and I mean, on this podcast in particular, you can't do right for doing wrong sometimes because we will bemoan pundits for not giving goalkeepers the credit that they deserve. Yet on the flip side of that, when goalkeepers do sometimes get credit that we don't feel is deserved, we'll then call them out for that. Is what the reason I'm saying this is because I was watching the Europa League game between Manchester United and Ammonia Nicosia on Thursday night, and Francis Uzoho, who made the 12 saves, who nearly kept United at bay, did so for so long until that late goal from Scott McTominay. And we tweeted about it. We said, you know, here he is, 12 saves. Look at that save, incredible. But it was just interesting to watch because this is a second, third choice goalkeeper for Amone Nicosia. So instantly, you've got that narrative that he has produced a masterclass of a performance at Old Trafford. The story is there. But listening to Ian Dark and Robbie Savage, the commentary team on BT Sport that night, it was like this was the greatest performance a goalkeeper has ever given. Mm. And again, fantastic that he's getting the credit. Fantastic that he's getting the coverage. And he did make a couple of very, very good saves. But thereafter, he was making saves that I guess ordinarily the pundits, the commentators, the co-commentators would label as routine saves, would say were comfortable saves for the goalkeeper, would say they were good height for a goalkeeper. But because Ujoa had made the saves, because of the platform that he was making the saves on, suddenly it became a completely different story. So again, great he's getting the credit, but again, slightly misguided in the credit and actually inconsistent in the credit you're giving him and other goalkeepers.
Yeah, and then I start seeing all the articles that they should sign him to be a challenge to be De Gea. But no, that's it. It's like the romanticism of football, isn't it? It's because exactly that, like I say for any goalkeeper, if you want to get the kind of game where you're going to get so much love, it's one of those games where you do have maybe four or five routine saves, then you make an absolute worldie, then you make a few more routine saves, and then maybe one more worldie and you keep a clean sheet. You're coming off the pitch and people are then talking about those routine saves as if they were worldies as well, and they start looking at them in almost a slightly different way rather than how they actually are. I'd always say to a goalkeeper, if you have one of those afternoons, absolutely take it, lap it up, because it can soon go the other way, of course. But it's so rare. I had it actually with one of the young goalkeepers that I work with, and he basically said that to me. He's like, oh yeah, no, they're really happy with me today, they were buzzing with me, kept a clean sheet, blah blah blah. And the save that he sent through, he was very honest. He said, look, they think this was like the save of the season, and they were so excited. And it was such a routine save. But I was saying to this particular lad, I was like, look, of course take it, because it can shift, and if people want to have that positive narrative about you, then don't necessarily take that away from them. That's fine, and if they want to think that about you, that's only going to help your own profile, and you know, it's good PR, etc. But again, it is part of the problem. In the a big part of what we talk about here is, don't get us wrong, we're often talking about what are perceived as mistakes and trying to break them down and give our perspective on them and a bit of analysis on them. But then similarly, it also counts the other way, where there are goalkeepers, and we've done that many times in this pod, where perhaps they're getting a lot of love for something that goalkeepers themselves know maybe doesn't quite deserve the level of love that it often gets.
Okay, Anfield, Liverpool 1, Manchester City 0. And both goalkeepers, before we get into the analysis, just looking excellent throughout in this one, in all areas. Both hugely accomplished goalkeepers, Alisson and Ederson. And Ederson, what could have been a crucial stop from Mo Salah had it not been for a classic Alisson assist to give Salah another bite at that one-on-one cherry. You've spoken about this before as well with Alisson, the long sidewinder and the slip as he does it. You called this last time out. I can't remember the game that it was, but you said he did this intentionally.
Yeah, I think he does. I think he tries to get that little bit extra purchase on it. And I think the way in which he does that is he puts his whole body into it. I'm surprised, though. Are we not getting a klaxon at this point? Or are you going to do that further down the show?
Wow. Yeah, you've called me. You've called me out. I haven't done it, have I?
No. Is it too late?
No, it's not. There we go.
I'm happy.
There's the klaxon. Well done, you. Forgetful. I was forgetful.
Which is ordinarily me, but there you go. I'm glad that this time it was you. No, look, I think you're right. Both goalkeepers, excellent on the day. I mean, the save from Ederson. The interesting thing about the save from Ederson is how many times. There's been a few times where he's been called out for coming so far down the line on one-on-ones. And this is a good example as to why he does it and how he does it so well, because he's a good 15 yards out, which ordinarily, a lot of people would say that's a little bit too far out. It allows the striker the opportunity to go round you and potentially have more space behind you in order to put it into an empty net. But I think he did it absolutely perfectly here, where he got close enough and he makes himself so low and so wide that it was Salah, wasn't it, that was one-on-one. He's put it and it was going right in the corner. But Ederson has covered so much space. It's the merest of touches, the smallest of touches, and it just goes round the post. It is the perfect one-on-one save. I thought it was an excellent save. And then, mentioning Alisson and the assist in particular, I thought Look, it's quick thinking. It's the awareness. You know, we spoke a lot on this show already about the tactical side of the game. It's the awareness to see that Salah is one-on-one with a defender. Now, of course, there's an element of luck. The defender gets rolled. Good bit of skill from Salah to make it a one-on-one. But the bit that Alisson does so well is to see the situation and see the opportunity and then execute the pass perfectly. It is the perfect pass to Salah, who is one-on-one with the defender. And the fact he's able to then turn him and get away from him, yeah, of course, it ends up being a fantastic assist.
Over to Molineux, where Wolves beat Nottingham Forest by 1-0. And Jose Sarr saving a penalty from Brennan Johnson. A second win of the season for Wolves. Big win, this. And I don't know whether you saw this, but Jose Sarr apparently playing with a broken wrist since the second day of the season when he saved another penalty from Alexander Mitrovic.
Well, there you go. I didn't actually know that. I can imagine he must be taking a lot of painkillers or something to get through that, because I can only think of every time you're catching the ball. And I know when you've got something that's not quite right, again, something that all goalkeepers can relate to, when you are playing with that injury, to try and block that out completely can be very tough. So huge credit to him. And it was an excellent pen save. I've actually written on my notes, room to spare. And what I mean by that is he's made the save, and you kind of felt like even if it was more in the corner, he still would have made the save. Like, he was so powerful getting across the line. He's actually reasonably comfortable where the ball is that he's able to get the parry away. I feel like even if it was right in the corner, he got such a good dive away that I think he would have saved it even there.
And a few more in the Premier League. David De Gea, 500 appearances now for Manchester United. He reached that landmark with a clean sheet at home to Newcastle United on Sunday. Tottenham 2, Everton 0. Jordan Pickford conceding a penalty, bringing down Harry Kane and getting very, very close to keeping out the subsequent spot kick. Doing well, Kane, against his England cohorts. We saw it against Aaron Ramsdale and now against Pickford. Fulham 2, Bournemouth 2, Bernd Leno with a good double save in that one. And Leicester 0, Crystal Palace 0. A good fingertip save from Danny Ward from Eberiche Eze. And we'll get on to Danny Ward in a moment too, just for another spot of analysis, this time on BBC Radio 5 Live.
Yeah, well, I'll start with David De Gea. Massive credit to him. I think to get to 500, certainly, I mean, it's been a roller coaster, it's fair to say. And on the whole, largely very, very positive. But, you know, it's fair to say that he's had a few tough times in there. So to still be going and going at the going in the way that he is, a massive well done to him. And I'm sure there's going to be many, many more games for him at United if he can continue his good form. Jordan Pickford, frustrating one for him, this one. I think, you know, and he did hold his hands up straight away after the penalty went in. It was quite an interesting reaction that he made it very clear that he took full responsibility for this. It's reasonably routine for someone of his ability down to his right-hand side. It's the kind of drill that you'll do in training over and over and over again. So no doubt he'd be really frustrated with this one, because technically, as he's gone down, you can actually see when the ball pops out, he didn't quite get the dive right, wasn't quite able to get the technique where he could trap it against the floor in the way that you do, with the angle of the dive being ever so slightly forward. Just looked like he went down slightly awkwardly, which then meant the ball did pop out. And then it's that moment thereafter where he's just panicked a little bit. And I think there is a natural tendency to then want to go and get the ball. And Harry Kane's very quick, gets to the ball first, reads the situation, knows the hand's coming out, and it is a clear penalty. So yeah, a frustrating one for Jordan. And yeah, lastly, Bernd Leno, I thought it was a good double save. Didn't get all that much credit for the first save, because it's one of them where it is close in, it's tough, you can't hold it, and all he can really do is parry it out. And I think the commentator at the time even made a comment that it wasn't a particularly good save. I don't think there's a lot more he can do with it other than get a firm contact and get it back into play. But then I thought the save thereafter, the reaction to tip it over the bar, I thought was excellent.
And just to finish on Danny Ward and that chat on BBC Radio 5 Live before that game between Leicester and Palace, he kept a clean sheet. He's been the subject recently of vitriolic abuse, really, on social media, which isn't ever pleasant to see. But they were talking about Danny Ward and Dan Iverson and the 1-2 at Leicester, and why Danny Ward is currently still in and his save percentage and what Brendan Rodgers might do. He might want to change it. Now, this was Steve Crossman, Charlie Adam, James McFadden and Statman Dave, who mentioned Danny Ward's save percentage. But again, in this instance, similar to away in the way that the guys on Sky Sports were talking about Kepa, they just went round the houses and almost counteracted their own arguments by the end of it in saying that Danny Ward should be the favoured number one. But just give us a summary on what that chat was all about.
Well, it was pulling out some pretty basic stats. So I think the shot stopping one, or the shot saving percentage, was one of the stats that was produced, which I think is or was just marginally under 50%, and how that wasn't good enough. But to be honest, I think the general feel about the whole punditry that we listened to, I think it was on Five Live, was that you could sense there wasn't really a conclusion to the conversation. It went on for a few minutes and they spoke about how they could potentially change it. Dan Iverson waiting in the wings. But I think what you could sense is that a lot of this is just being said, and it's just a narrative that's being formed without any real, analysis as to what has happened. Because let's be honest, you look at the goals, yet there have been one or two that Danny Ward will be a little bit frustrated by. But the majority, even though his shot-saving percentage is reasonably low, I wouldn't say there were many goals that have gone in that he would have held his hands up and said, that is my fault. I think Leicester as a club are struggling. I think it's always tough when you're stepping in. We've spoke about this before, when you're stepping into the shoes of someone like Kasper Schmeichel. But I do think a lot of what is being said, and certainly a lot of what we heard in this particular bit of punditry on Five Live, was that no one's really looked into it that deeply. It is just, what about Iverson? He did well on loan a couple of times, so surely it should be his chance now. Or do we go and get another goalkeeper? But actually kind of glossing over the fact that at the moment, unfortunately, Leicester just aren't a very good football team.
In addition to this, I do think that if it had been a centre-back, a central midfielder, a striker, a linchpin of the side that isn't a goalkeeper that had left Leicester in the way that Kasper Schmeichel left Leicester in the summer, that would be pinpointed as a major reason as to why Leicester are where they are now. But because it's Kasper Schmeichel, because it's a goalkeeper, this is a guy who played for the club so many times, Champions League, titles, captain, a real leader of that side. But because it's a goalkeeper, it's not being referenced as much as it would have been if it was an outfielder.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that probably sums up, you know, what we do on this pod, I guess, to a large extent, in that, you know, had it have been, as you say, a central midfielder or someone that scores a lot of goals or what have you, is maybe seen slightly differently. And also with that, you know, I've got my mentality on this in that I think often when a goalkeeper is replacing another goalkeeper who has been at a club for so, so long, that goalkeeper does need an extra bit of support, whether that be from the manager, the fans, the club itself, because I think there is always going to be a transitionary period. You knew what you were going to get from a Kasper Schmeichel in terms of him as a goalkeeper. Those he played with would know him inside out. They'd have built that relationship. Well, to start a brand new relationship, someone stepping into the mold like Danny Ward is, that does take a bit of time. And at the moment, I'm pleased to see that Brendan Rodgers hasn't done anything. He's stuck with him and, as you say, got some benefit from this particular game. Clean sheet, which no doubt will give him a certain feeling. He'll feel good on the back of this, I'm sure. So you now hope that maybe that narrative can gradually start to change, but probably similar to what we spoke of before in regards to Kepa. I think that once a narrative starts to go down a certain track, it gains momentum, it gains energy. So now for that to flip, it might not be quite so simple as one clean sheet.
It is the EFL overview in the Championship, where Thomas Kaminski was strutting his stuff near the end of Blackburn's victory over Middlesbrough. He tipped over from Matt Crooks earlier to preserve the lead and then saved 3 points with an instinctive right arm to deny Chuba Akpom. Good performance from Kaminski.
Yeah, excellent. I actually watched this game live and yeah, he was very, very good. They looked so comfortable at 2-0 up. Then they went 2-1 and really in the end were fortunate to get the 3 points. And that was, you know, largely thanks to Thomas Kaminski. The save of this top hand I thought was excellent. Top corner, great agility, power to get up there. But then it was the next save. And it's one that, it's interesting, I've read a few articles on it and some are calling it save of the season. Some are saying that it's slightly fortunate. What it is very intelligent. So it's a really odd situation. The ball's come back off the post and he kind of finds himself in an awkward position. The strikers come in just to put it into an empty net, effectively. And out of nowhere, he produces the strongest hand. Like, if you can imagine, he's just put his hand out. And for all the places it could have gone in the goal, he's hit it and it's gone towards his hand and hit this big, strong hand and found its way back out of the goal. It's just the most unlikely of saves. You know, from that position, yeah, I'm sure in terms of the whole XGA, this would have been 99.999. This has to be a goal from where it is. It's such a simple finish. And for it to hit the one part of his body that's going to mean he could get enough power to get it out, that's essentially what's happened, which was why I think we saw the celebration from Thomas soon after. And I don't blame him, because it is one of those moments as a goalkeeper you probably have once in your career to make a save like this. And it really was top.
Zach Steffen as well, really good save in that game. That will do him a lot of good. A month or so now before the World Cup, it's going to be very interesting to see who that number one will be for the US. And not often when you lose 4-0 essays referenced with much regard. But this is the Goalkeepers Union podcast. It's what we do. So, Stephen Bender at full stretch to palm over from Josh Brownhill in Swansea's defeat at Burnley. But two spawny goal of the weekend contenders in the same game at Kenilworth Road. Jimmy Dunn and Senny Dien clattering into each other for Luton to go 2-0 up against QPR. And then Ethan Horvath, one of the other US goalkeepers battling for that number one spot in Qatar, with one of those unfortunate in-off-the-bar-and-back scenarios.
Yeah, Zach Steffen, that save. Huge save. I just thought, I use that word a lot, but athleticism. The way in which he's managed to contort, is that the word? Contort his body. It was just phenomenal. So powerful. And brilliant save from him to get it over the bar. And then, as you mentioned, a couple of spawny goals. I think that Senny Dien will be a little bit frustrated with himself that he decided to come off the line and get involved. I think this is one of those situations, balls come over the top, where if he drops, the defender probably gets there first and is able to lay it back to him and there wouldn't be too much danger. He does decide to come and take everything, which is, I suppose that is the cliche. If you're going to come and take everything. Well, that's what he does. But unfortunately, he's only able to clear it against his defender and the ball obviously ends up in the back of his net. I don't think there's a lot that Ethan Horvath can do. Horrible moment. Ball headed across against the crossbar. Doesn't even have a chance to react to it. By the time he reacted, it's already hit him on the back and gone in the goal. So it's just one of those annoying moments for a goalkeeper.
Dieng, by the way, for that goal, that own goal by Horvath, was up from the back again. Ratios for him this season. That's two times he's come up from the back at a corner. And twice a goal has been scored. So 100% scored the first time. Didn't score this time, but must have played a part. And finally, West Fotheringham, fisticuffs at the end of a barnstormer between Sheffield United and Blackpool. Now, this is the sort of thing to young listeners, young aspiring goalkeepers listening in, where we should say, you don't want to see that. However, you watch that and go, quite good to see that. Quite like it.
I mean, it was just... and this, annoyingly, this wasn't one of the games that I did watch this weekend. I had several on, but this wasn't one, which I really wish now I'd have watched this, because it just sounded like the most insane game with everything. Red cards, penalties, lots of goals. And West Fotheringham, certainly the game itself, there's not a lot you could have done on the goals. And it just, it's hard to see exactly what happened, but it does. Big melee at the end. He gets involved in an altercation and the referee decides to send them both off, which it'll be interesting. I'm sure they'll try and appeal it, but I don't know if there's a lot they can appeal here, because certainly on the camera, it does look like he does get into a bit of a wrestling match of sorts. I mean, he wins the wrestling match for what it's worth. I think that he does pin him down on the ground. So I don't know if there's some credit to be given there. But as you say, for our young listeners, we can't be encouraging actions such as this, Matthew.
Very good, Richard. Very diplomatic. Into League One, where a whopping 33 shots were faced by Carl Rushworth at Ipswich. A clean sheet and a win for Lincoln. Jamie Cumming with a rare fumble in Plymouth's humbling of MK Dons. Two goals conceded when playing out from the back in that one as well. Dimitar Mitov, explain to me this one. What's happened in two loop-de-loop sort of instances here? First, the sort of double save without it being a double save from a free kick, and then the second goal conceded, and wonderful scenes at Accrington. Sean McConville with two penalties in very quick succession. The first saved by Derby's Joe Wildsmith, the second put wide, but you'd like to say Wildsmith had it covered, and then seconds later, Derby go up the other end and effectively secure victory. You love to see it.
You do, as a goalkeeping enthusiast, it's fair to say. I think as an Accrington fan, maybe not quite so much, but no, credit to Joe Wildsmith. Very good first penalty save. Read the situation brilliantly. The fact that it's a penalty a minute later to then, it's the same taker as well. And it's one of them, like people ask me, what would you do if it's the same taker taking two penalties in a game? Ordinarily, I'd say if they've scored the first, they're probably going to do the same thing for the second. The probability would suggest they do based on what's happened previously. But then if they've missed the first, there's often a good chance they'll do something different on the second. So I think the psychological side here for Wildsmith to read him and to know that he's going the same way, and you could see he's, or I could sense that he's got in his head here to an extent, because it really isn't a very good penalty, the second one. So yeah, huge credit to Joe Wildsmith. Jamie Cumming, as you mentioned, unfortunate moment for him. It just looks like the MK Dons are just playing with zero confidence. I mean, they're trying to play a really nice brand of football, trying to play out from the back in the way they do. They did so effectively last season to get you know, 80 plus points, but just isn't happening for them this season. It must be really tough for a goalkeeper such as, you know, Jamie, who is a top young goalkeeper, of course, but a lot of the time, and actually these goals in particular, he was doing the right thing. He was finding the passes, but then the sitting midfielder might then lose possession, or one of the defenders lose possession. And of course, if you're losing possession regularly in your defending third, then there's just not a lot you can do as a goalkeeper, unfortunately. And Dimitrov, the only thing I can think here is that it looked like it was a really, really windy day, certainly for the first one. And he's ended up making a decent save, a double save on the second one. But it was kind of like an odd situation. And then the goal itself, it's almost like it's taken a slightly unusual deflection. So he's like dived, misjudged it ever so slightly. But I do think that was partly due to the way in which the ball comes off the foot and potentially a deflection. It's kind of looped into the top corner. So again, just a bit of a frustrating one for him. But I'm not sure if there's a great deal he could have done, to be honest.
And into League Two, where there are three goalkeepers to name this week, two of whom were on the losing side. Nick Zanev, three excellent stops as AFC Wimbledon lost at home to Sutton. Had a tweet in from G Willow, who asked, any ideas how this wasn't a foul Sutton scored from this incident? That was the first goal, I think, but it looked as though it was very much a case of the opposition player pushing the defender into the goalkeeper and the referee deeming it as the defender just clattering into his own goalkeeper. Doncaster's Jonathan Mitchell on the wrong end of a 3-0 defeat to Carlisle. However, arguably the save of the weekend before the floodgates opened. A late penalty stop in that one too. And David Robson in for his EFL debut at Crawley. He's on loan from Hull. He was signed after the situation with Ellery Balcombe getting injured earlier in the season. He'd played second fiddle to Corey Adai up until the weekend. Kevin Betsy was then sacked. Interim boss goes with Robson. Very good performance and ending a run of five successive defeats.
Yeah, and it was an excellent save. I don't know if it actually got credited on the EFL show, but yeah, fingertips, full stretch. And as you say, to come in for your debut and put in a performance like that, huge well done to him. Nick Zanev, yeah, some fantastic saves. I mean, a couple in particular I thought were top draw, top performance. And it was a foul, as you mentioned, the message that came in. But it is just one of them. I guess when you look at it and you don't see what's happened prior, all you see is your defender clattering into the goalkeeper. I can understand why the ref hasn't given it. But of course, you see the replay and you see there's a reason that the defender has clattered into the goalkeeper. Very much a push from the opposing player. And Jonathan Mitchell, the save into the top corner. I mean, so explosive to get himself up there in the way that he did and get the fingertips up onto the bar and then to save a penalty as well, as you mentioned, on the losing side, unfortunately, but certainly not a great deal more that he could have done.
Just to finish on this, to round up the EFL too, David Robson coming in wasn't the only time a goalkeeper this weekend, or this week, in fact, since the last time we recorded, has come in and the goalkeeping situation has changed. We saw it with Max O'Leary replacing Dan Bentley at Bristol City. Toby Savin came in and replaced Lucas Jensen at Accrington at the weekend. Joe Day has come back in and replaced Nick Townsend at Newport County. And Angus Gunn came in for Tim Krul for Norwich against Watford on Saturday. We've had Palmer with Button at West Brom, we've had Maxwell and Grimshaw at Blackpool, we've had Wilson and Moore and Coventry. We're seeing it quite a lot, aren't we? Just, what, 14, 15 games down?
Yeah, and it does feel like it's this time of the season. I haven't got any stats to back this up, but I do think this season, more than ever, we're seeing a change in goalkeepers. You know, it just feels like at the moment, you just mentioned probably, what, a good 10, 12 there, which is, there's only 92 clubs to speak of. So a good 10-15% are changing their goalkeepers within the last week or two, which I'm sure that is above and beyond what you normally have. You know, there's so many seasons gone by where a goalkeeper will play every single game of the season. I think now, given the general mentality of football, and maybe goalkeepers in particular, we are seeing changes made that much sooner than maybe we would have seen before. Clean Sheet Club. Well, I have to say, there were plenty of clean sheets this weekend. It is, of course, time for this. Starting the Premier League, David Raya, Barna Boy, Danny Ward, 2-3, Vicente Guaita, both cleans from goalless draws. Jose Sarr, local Braga, writes, Hugo Lloris, the ball stuck to him like toffee. Kepa Arrizabalaga, best run since he joined Chelsea. Aaron Ramsdale, Arsenal's number one. David De Gea, 500 up. Nick Pope, connect four. Alisson, winning the Battle of Brazil. Into the Championship, Aaron Murich, back in, back clean. Ben Wilson, still in, still clean. Joe Bursic, staying in, getting cleaner. Alex Palmer, new in, new clean. John Ruddy, so long he's in the cleanest of them all. In League One, Joe Wildsmith, Penno Party. James Trafford, ever present. Brad Collins, reads attackers like a dictionary. David Stockdale, Blockdale. Marco Morosi, a shrew shushing a shrimp. Carl Rushworth, successive shutouts. And finally in League Two, Ross Doohan, sound the siren. Five in a row, Lewis Ward, account opened. Thomas Holy, Cumbrian keeper. Lawrence Vigouroux, another one. Lee Burge, hailing from Hereford. Harry Lewis and the news. Sol Brin, you can county ground on him.
Lovely stuff, very good. Richard, worth mentioning Ross Doohan there. Five clean sheets in a row for Tranmere as they soar up that League Two table. And he's also made his way into the clean sheet club table too. He is in second spot with 8 in 13 games alongside Lawrence Vigouroux. They are one behind Freddie Woodman, who has 9 in 15, and David Stockdale with 8 in 14 underneath those two. So it's all getting very, very gritty. Richard, I think that's us for another week.
Excellent. I've really enjoyed it.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, keepers away.